Blog Talk Radio.
This is Rare Bird Radio. I'm Mary Tabor, author of the recently released novel, Who by Fire. My guest today is the painter, poet, and perhaps the soul of Big Sur. And
wow.
Sorry about that. And perhaps the soul
sounds good to
of
me.
Big Sur, California. A former young ballerina, when 12, Kleefeld might have ended up instead at the Bolshoi when the Toland Ballet School held recitals and the Bolshoi offered to train her. But her mother nixed that dream. Perhaps we'll hear that story today. Growing up in a family of business folk, Kleefeld is the youngest child of philanthropist S. Mark Taper and his wife Amelia. That must have presented its own challenges, though Kleefeld has said she ended up with the artistic temperament of her mother, who once did freelance illustrations for Vogue. Great beauty has been hers, and early in life she modeled briefly. She's even had an agent at the William Morris Agency and been offered a movie contract. She's met, believe this, I don't believe it, it's hard to believe, she's met Rock Hudson, Paul Newman, Dinah Shore, but perhaps most tellingly for us today, the poet Allen Ginsberg. As an artist, Kleefeld belongs in Big Sur, a locale also chosen by the author Henry Miller, and she reads often at the library built there in his honor. She is most definitely a giant presence in Big Sur, where she makes her home on a cliff, paints, writes, and loves. One of her collections of poems and paintings, Kissing Darkness, Love Poems and Art, was written with her then-poet lover David Wayne Dunn, and an upcoming collection will feature Kleefeld's writing, painting, and also David Campagna's musings about his love for Carolyn as they appear side by side in a book coming out, I think this year, under the title Renaissance of Love. I had the pleasure of briefly meeting this gorgeous couple when I was in L.A. on book tour. Kleefeld has been a prodigious producer of paintings and writings with love, all caps, front and center. Let's just count out loud before we find out about her creative rigors, the discipline she's exercised, and the gifts that the work has brought her. 10 books of writings and paintings published since her first book, Climates of the Mind, in 1979. And most recently, Psyche of Mirrors. Kleefeld has seen her work translated into Braille and Korean. Her artistic statement that appears in my favorite of her books, Visions from Big Sur, and during this exchange I will explain why, is perhaps a good way to introduce her here. Kleefeld says, "My life's passion is to create art from the unconditioned well of being and to inspire such a journey in others." Carolyn Mary Kleefeld, you've got quite a story to tell, and we can't wait to hear it. And with that, I welcome you to Rare Bird Radio.
Wow.
Hi.
I can't thank you enough. What a beautiful, it's like a symphony of feelings, and made me feel extremely embraced. So thank you, Mary.
You're welcome.
Beautiful.
I'm so glad, and I hear that in your voice, the sincerity in your voice, as I see in your paintings and your work. First, I
and
want
I think
to
it takes to... one to know one. You wouldn't be able to honor me so dearly if you weren't, you know, a mirror of the same kind of person, maybe with very different styles. But you know, you definitely have and you show it in your book, Who by Fire, all these rich and beautiful things that you've just mentioned.
Oh, thank you. Oh, goodness, thank you. I'm so glad you've read it. That's such a thrill.
Read it all
There's
weekend,
barely
and I was mesmerized. And
oh.
Yeah, you know,
really?
Just, it's so skillfully written and just brought out a lot about, you know, reminding me of different times in my life where I lived certain aspects of what you brought out, you know, with the love and betrayal and heroism and...
Oh, my goodness, you have.
Yeah,
maybe
it brought me to think about a lot of things that I hadn't thought about. It was very inspiring and igniting, you know. So thank
well,
you.
Well, thank you so mm-hmm. much for that. I must tell you, Carolyn, that I've had very few interviews on the show of anyone who's actually read the book. I actually have a book club on Goodreads that's called the Who By Fire Book Club, but we never discuss my book. We just
anytime.
So what a great generosity that is for you to have said that, and maybe we'll come back to it a
wonderful contribution to all of us.
Well, thank you
Thank you, Mary.
Oh, I want our listeners to know that they can hear you read with musical accompaniment in Vagabond Dawns, your book that includes a CD. I want them to know that because it's just a beautiful piece, and the piano music that goes with it along with you reading is just so lovely.
I'm so glad that you've heard it. Yeah. It's for me, it was a great breakthrough to read with music. You know, I never was
really?
Out of my readings. Yeah, I was always let down by my readings, and then being that I was a ballerina, prima ballerina, and thank you for mentioning all that. I don't know why it's important, but it is. In some way, we keep dancing, you know, whether it's on toes or our minds or physically, you know, in some other way. But when I read the poems, it was like I was dancing. You know, my voice was dancing to the music, just like when I had done that as a young woman, you know.
Well, you know, that was really going to be my very first question. It's so wonderful that you picked up on that. I think we're on the same wavelength. I think we might be channeling. You know, for a 12-year-old
to surprise me.
Well, for a 12-year-old to be chosen for the Bolshoi is so remarkable because we all know what that I love the ballet, and I see the dance in your paintings. I truly see it in your paintings. But it also demonstrates, on your part, early ability at both performance and athletics. And you can just see the role of dance in your painting. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Oh, absolutely. I used to paint in toe shoes with a big tarp on the floor in my living room. And, you know, I was throwing paint in those days before I threw my back out. And forgot I had a body and just went for it with big canvases and threw paint and... you know, and the music was playing all the time. It was a dance, you know, and it was like feeling one with nature standing over the canvas, and I guess kind of a Pollock kind of thing, which I didn't know about him at the time. I was just doing my thing on a mountaintop, and the music played, and the painting happened, and it's all, you know, it's all so incredibly, you know, interrelated, as we know, you know, everything is.
Definitely interrelated. You say you hadn't heard of Pollock at that point. How early was the painting really seriously becoming part of your life?
Oh, that kind of painting?
Yeah.
You know, I still mix it up. I did one, you know, half that way the other day and then mixed it with more of a literal, you know, interpretation, mixed, the wild paint with a... you know, with the defining, but that really has to happen, you know, just like with the writing and the painting, you know, I start out throwing things, you know, just, you know, with the paint, throwing it sometimes and I used a hose the other day up in front on the property and just erased the whole thing and, you know, just a great sense of freedom.
So does that mean you're working in acrylics?
It kind of means that I'm allowing freedom and intuition just to take me where it does, and then it is acrylics, you know, when I do that kind of work. And then I took off the hose and I washed it all away.
Wow.
And it's just playing, you know, there's a lot of play that I allow myself and that I want. And
well, that's an interesting
You know, it's what turns me on, you know, so I let it happen that way.
You know, I have a wonderful book. It's called The Writer's Brush, and in that book, Henry Miller, clearly Henry Miller has been important in your life in many ways. He came to painting late, but one of the things he says, I think I read this in a Paris Review interview, he says that painting was play.
Exactly. Yeah, I have his book, too, and he does talk about that. And, you know, it's I think that's where we allow ourselves to invent things is when we, you know, don't put ourselves in a box, you know, about what we're doing. We just feel our way and have trust in the unknown, you know, or faith.
Well, you know, he came to write
Far Away in the Dark, you know. At least that's what it is for me a lot of the time.
Far Away
in
the
Dark? You know, I'm really my way in the dark and don't know what I'm doing and then end up with something and I'm surprised. So maybe it's a way of going backwards into the work, you know.
Well, I feel that way, too, when I come to the page, as if I have no idea what
oh,
I'm
really?
Doing. Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
because yours seems so marvelously... technically, you know, so good, and I think, oh my God, how does she do it? You know, so
you
do it. You don't have it in your head at all.
No, absolutely not. And
oh,
you know,
fabulous,
Carolyn.
Good for you.
I've been teaching for many years, and what I say to my students all the time is, after we do the analytical work, I mean, as in painting, I'm sure there's some things you have to know. One has
uh-huh.
to know some basic things, but
yeah,
once you
yeah,
get
well,
that analytical. Once you get that analytical stuff in your head, the most important advice I give them is don't think.
Yeah.
Don't think.
Really go beyond what your concepts.
Yes, because if
yeah.
you're thinking, you're not inventing.
Yeah,
and
the word, you know, itself means to grasp. But then, you know, if you really think about it all, you know, we need all of it, you know, and I think painting's the same way, writing's the same way.
Yeah.
It needs all of it, you know, it needs the... restraint, and it needs the freedom, and it needs you know, the editing later, and it, you know, on the freedom
right,
in the beginning,
right.
and, you know, all of it. It's
yeah,
kind of
so
like all of life, you know. Just
so,
there's that word yalam. I think it comes from Israel, that means all of it, you know, and it's that kind of thing. You just let it all appear, and it comes at different stages. You know, the process appears as you appear, you know, in many different multidimensional. Stages.
Well, let me.
And it shows up in the art that way. You know, you look at a piece of art and you go, "Oh, that's how could I have done that? That's just terrible." You know, I'm not painting any good anymore. And you start a whole number,
and
then
you
remember.
Whatever.
You remember that it's all important because that's part of whatever's going to happen. You know, next, just like life.
You
know, we need all of it.
When you say that you see a kind of technical. Proficiency in my work, I want you to know
very
that.
Much.
Well, thank you, but I want you to know that comes later. You know, it may be that I'm doing
oh.
some of it naturally, but there is the whole novel was written before I went back and did any kind of work to try to really make sure that the through line worked perfectly and all of those things that you've discussed.
Yeah, it shows great skill.
Well, thank
and,
you.
And did you have anybody work as an editor with you or?
Well, you know what I did? And I want to ask you a question related to this. I do believe we are absolutely channeling. I do. But I have two very good friends who are writers who in the later, one of them is a poet. And
mm-hmm.
Her name is Bonnie Riedinger, and she's in the acknowledgments in the end of the book. And throughout the writing of this book, she was reading and commenting, and then at the very close, she became a very heavy and an important role. She played a heavy and important role in saying, things are just, there's some things you really need to go back and look at, so absolutely. But my question to you about this is that I think it takes a lot of courage to go into the arts in many ways, and I think you have probably have a lot to say about this, but I want to ask you a particular question first.
Sure.
You talked about the role of lovers, mentors, and friends in keeping up courage because the faith of others has been like Bonnie Riedinger's faith in me has been really important to me.
Mm.
Been those who have played roles for you as encouragers, cheerleaders?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think that I'm getting an image of a meadow of seeds, you know, being, and that if you don't have, you have your seed there, but if you don't have this, you know, I'm beginning to think of them as a congregation of angels or guardians around you. that your own seed, you know, can't go that far. It is what it is, and it needs to be interrelated with others on a very deep and creative level. And for me, you know, if I met Patricia Holt 35 years ago in L.A.
Wow, really? Really?
And she was at a change in her life from an executive job in her 20s, and she was living in a world that, you know, I had not lived in. But, you know, we had our opposite sides, and we also had, you know, an incredible rapport. And from there we formed our publishing company, and all, you know, this whole world of art opened up because of her, really. I could never have done it. I'm just not made that way.
So you formed a publishing company together, the two of you formed
a publishing company? Yeah, we had a publishing company, the Horse and Bird Press. And
oh,
we,
wow.
Our goal or mission or vision was to publish poets from all over the world. And we started out with mine, and that kept us so busy that it stayed on a certain level for about the first 10 years. And then
Right. Now
we're totally interlinked with poets all over the world.
Really?
Close to, Stanley Barkin, our publisher, and Peter Thabit Jones in England, who teaches my work now, and John Dodson.
Wonderful.
There's a whole group of poets, you know, that... And Lydia in Italy. You know, so we're all connected now. We all encourage each other, and we all use each other's work, and it's amazing.
Oh, how lovely and generous.
I'm sorry, I think I went on too long.
No, you did not at all. That was so informative and so interesting. And also, you know, you generously gave some wonderful news for others to hear about other poets, and what a great thing to do. I love what you had to say.
Good.
I think
that
was wonderful.
I know,
and
I've left out all sorts of people, but, you know, it's just that to be connected is just a primary. That's what I'm really saying, you know. Makes all the difference. And my latest relationship has helped to get me off the mountain and into the world. And
how so? This will be with David Campagna?
Yeah. And then before him, Laura Huxley got me away from here because I get overly focused.
I was just going to talk about Laura Huxley. Laura Huxley,
we could go
for our
if
listeners,
you want.
Is the widow of Aldous Huxley, whom Carolyn met. And
very
fortunately,
close.
I became very close with her, and she did an absolutely, and Aldous Huxley is, of course, the author of Brave New World, for listeners who might not know, but you did a painting of in memoriam of Laura Huxley, which strikingly demonstrates the importance of love in your life.
Yes, she was my great muse, let's put it that way, and Edmund Carr also, the man that did the sculpture for the movie with Elizabeth Taylor I'm getting a little block there. But anyway, it's a movie about
this. It'll come to you.
But he, you know, so they were my great muses. And, you know, without these relationships, definitely it would all be very questionable or maybe not even possible.
Yeah,
I don't think it would be possible.
Well,
I think we're made, you know, to all have like this miraculous biochemical mix, you know, that then creates and resonates from there.
You know, I want to go back a little bit into the early
The Sandpiper. That's what I was thinking of.
Edmund Carr,
who created the sculpture of Elizabeth Taylor for the Sandpiper, and he was my neighbor. And
he was a
fabulous, masterful sculptor. And I have some of the work that I've written about him and his paintings. I have them in my book, you know.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, he was a powerful creative force, you know, just amazing. So another muse, that's really what I'm saying.
Well, you've met some really marvelous people. But before
this is
a risky business we're talking about in the sense that, let me put it this way. Here's an oft-quoted, it's actually an unsourced line that's attributed to Anise Nin, Henry Miller's lover.
Oh, and I knew her, you know.
Did you? Wow.
We used to correspond, and I was up at her house a few times, and she was the beginning of the muses.
Well, okay, this line has been attributed to her, but I don't think anybody can properly source it because I've done all sorts of searching for it and can't find it. But here's the line, whether she said it or not. I want to ask you a question related to this.
And
she is attributed, she is said to have said, and then the day came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom. Now, whether or not she said that, can you talk to me about the difficulty of coming to the art as your primary work?
What did you say again, the question?
She said, and then the day came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom.
Huh.
And I somehow sensed this in your journey, somehow, that there were
You mean some kind of tension that one brings to the work?
Some blockages to your path.
I think a lot of it is, you know, I'm into this biochemical thing lately, which is a relief from all my psychological and philosophical wanderings. I like the biochemical. Kind of feels more grounded and basic.
What is the biochemical?
To look at the creative process biochemically is that we need to excite ourselves in some way or raise the adrenaline level or whatever. I'm saying it poetically, not scientifically. But raise the adrenaline level and get yourself going so you can really get into it.
Does this have to do with what you eat when you say biological?
Well, I mean, it could be drinking coffee. It could be having a stimulating conversation or hang gliding or, you know, running down the block. Whatever it does, makes you have that kind of hyped energy. And then you, because, you know, I can paint when I'm in a slow meditative state, but I don't think I really create from that particularly. You know, I have to have something that needs to be expressed.
Wow.
Something has to be there, you know.
Well, it was.
Well, I don't know. Does that make sense at all?
It does make sense. I was kind of wondering about some of the things that you say that you're quoted as having said in the book that I really love, this book that is sitting in front of me right here along with all your others called Visions from Big Sur. And one of the things you say in there is that there was some, I mean, your family was not all supportive of this move, this business.
Oh, when I went up here to Big Sur?
I don't know. I really don't know. But
didn't like it at all. He was quite old by then. And we were going to have our reunion, which happened later in his last years, but which is in my book, Alchemy of Possibility.
Yes, it is. It is.
Yeah,
and also,
it was all about coming together at that point, you know.
But you did this beautiful painting, I think it was after he died in 1992.
I think it was
94. Oh, was it 94? Well, in 92... well, there are two paintings that I adore. One is the painting called It is a Fantasy World.
Oh, yeah.
I love this painting. And the one you did for your father, S. Mark Taper, the famous philanthropist, is when he was quite old and he was alive. And I think he was alive maybe perhaps when you did this title, Going to See Pops.
Can you
talk about these two paintings?
Oh, well, the last one you mentioned, I remember it was in the car with my dear friend John, who lives here and helps me with everything. And anyway, he was driving, and we were going to see my dad. And then the horse that I love to draw.
There's a horse in the center of this painting, folks who are listening. It's really beautiful. And the horse has a painting on his lap, I think, something like that.
Is that a pink horse?
Yes.
Isn't that pink?
If I remember correctly.
I have
it right here. I'm going to let me just look it up. But it's definitely in the pinkish family. I'd be better at identifying the exact color. But
I grew up in a pink room, and I had a horse I had an obsession for.
Mabel.
My first great love.
Yes, the horse. The horse is pink in Going to See Pops. Yes, definitely pink. it's such a beautiful painting.
I just was fortunate to have something I love that much, and gave her a birthday party once, and my friends brought all their horses, and I made her a carrot cake with candles, and she blew it out when she sneezed, and the whole thing was just, I'll never forget it, you know.
to have a horse's
birthday party.
Right. In this
way,
book,
I don't want
I
to
love...
take us off into things, you know.
Well, one of the things I love about this book is we get to see a childhood painting that you made, and I think something new is happening with that childhood painting, is it not?
Well, I'm sure, we keep moving, but I think the childhood...
This is Nanos. Nanos in Nanos Land.
Oh, the Nanos. That was conceived without my realizing it, of course, as a child walking through my bedroom, and there was like a flood of sunbeams coming in the room, and my imaginative child, imagination took off with it and felt like every little particle was another little entity of some kind, and so I called them Nanos. And then later on, I find out that science has, identified the tiniest atom as being a nano. So
wow.
A friend of mine said, hey, you know that story you wrote when you were nine, wrote it and illustrated it, that's something science recognizes now.
Yeah,
so it was very interesting to me that a child is tuned in, or can be, to that quantum level, in a metaphoric language.
Absolutely.
Poetry being metaphors a lot, you know.
Yes. Carolyn, were you also affected in any way by your parents? Your parents were Jewish.
Right.
And spent many years helping both Jews and Christians escape Nazi Germany and Eastern Europe. And I do see that two of your poems will appear in the annual anthology Poetry from Israel and Abroad. I'm wondering what, if any, has been the role of your Jewish heritage in your work or your life? As I'm also Jewish.
That's a fabulous question. And I immediately think it's all about healing. Healing, as a way of life. And as a way of life for the world, if it's to continue, it has to be continual healing. And I think the healing and the helping others is, primary. I think it's one of my great blessings that I'm able to be there on certain levels. That gives me great satisfaction, with people I love and with people I, of course, don't know. It's a great feeling, one of the great feelings. And So I'm sure that's, inherited. And my daughter, Carla Kleefeld, is very active now. She's being a lobbyist in Washington,
She's also a painter, is she not?
My other daughter, Claudia.
Oh, that's Claudia. Oh, I see. Claudia, yes.
Carla is a psychotherapist and a lobbyist and a tournament tennis player. She's just out there, And there I see that same wanting to help people, when she goes to Washington and lobbies.
So were you raised Jewish or not?
What's that?
Were you raised in synagogue, or was that not been a part of your life?
I had very little, practically none.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel that somehow my nature and my soul, I think, is deeply religious, just deeply. But it's more guided by intuition, and I think it ends up being more like Buddhism than anything else I could think of, or being a Hindu or something.
That's how the work strikes me. So that's what, part of the reason I
Yeah, it's just a natural part of my nature. Like I saved a little creature from my pool the other day. It had transparent wings, was very small.
Wow.
And I breathed on it, and I put a shell over it to protect it. The next day it was gone, and I was so thrilled. So there's just something in my nature that loves to save things and save lives, and that kind of thing.
Well, there's such lightness in these two paintings that I mentioned. It is a fantasy world. I hope everyone will go and try to find these and look at these. And going to see Pops is just an absolutely beautiful painting. I wish I owned it. I'm sure someone very famous owns it. Maybe Ted Turner, who lived next door to you for a while, bought that one.
God, I don't even know where it is.
Really? You don't?
Yeah, I'd have to figure it out.
Don't you have a show coming up soon? Do you have something?
We have the show in Santa Barbara right now.
Okay, Santa Barbara. So folks on the
Carpellas
West Coast can...
Library and Museum. Should I talk about it now, Mary? Or?
Yeah, let's because the show is going to close soon. So do everyone where they can see your work.
Oh, well, thank you for bringing it up. It's right now we have a show through October and November at the Carpellas Museum and Library, or the other way around, in Santa Barbara. And a wonderful director there, Norman. And I have my show called Divine Kiss. And I have 15 paintings written from the inspiration of David Campagna, this wonderful man, and 15 poems right next to them. So it's a show, you know, driven by Eros.
Aha, okay.
Very happy Eros.
Yes. So love is our theme. Love is our theme today.
Right.
It has been such a pleasure to talk to you, and I want to thank you so much for reading Who by Fire, which, as you may
have guessed,
the title comes from our favorite man in the world. Don't we both know who we are talking about
I
here?
I know who you mean.
Let's say his name, Leonard Cohen.
Yeah.
Yes, we love Leonard Cohen.
Well, we have a lot in common. You know, even though our styles of writing are different, we're driven by many of the same passions.
Yes, yes. And this, of course, the title of my book also comes out of the Jewish liturgy, which, of course, the song Who by Fire also comes out of the Jewish liturgy, since Leonard Cohen's from the rabbinical, he was not a rabbi, but there are rabbis in his background.
Oh, that's right. Very
yes,
much.
Yes. But as Carolyn, I just want to tell you, you've been such a delight to talk to, and I want to thank you for joining me here and for doing me the honor of reading Who by Fire. And I must tell you that I link you to William Blake, painter and poet.
Oh,
and
what a beautiful, beautiful thought.
And the poet's motto.
Very generous. Thank you.
Well, and the poet's motto, and he said, I must create a system or be enslaved by another man's. I will not reason and compare. My business is to create. I believe that's
fine with you. Thank you. That's so beautiful.
You're welcome.
Wonderful.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Mary, really. It's been a true delight and a magnificent journey with you, and I hope to see you in the future.
I hope so, and I hope we'll remain in contact, because you are just a delight to talk to, and the paintings are so beautiful, and I encourage everyone to buy the books and to see more of Carolyn Mary Gliefeld. Thank you, and have a great, and for you it's afternoon, for me it will be evening.
Okay, dear, have a beautiful night, and thank you so much for your wonderful being.
Blessings.
Blessings to you.
Bye-bye.
And great love. Bye.